Good morning. Joining us is, okay, now wait a minute. Economic Development Department?
Director.
Oh, okay.
Division.
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 Director.
Division Director.
Scott Adair. And noted community commenter. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
You know, everybody says that when it starts. All right. We're going to move into our questions, sports and leisure.
Sports and leisure.
Yeah. Are you a sporty guy or a leisure guy?
Both.
Good. Okay, here we go.
I'm very sporting at how I love to leisure.
Okay. So smart guy. Here's a question. It was legit, and now it's non-PC, which I feel very comfortable with.
Okay. The question.
Why were the Cleveland baseball team called the Indians?
Why were they called
the
Indians?
Now they're the Guardians. And,
right,
yeah.
Right.
But why were they called the Indians?
Well, I would imagine that there was a strong Native American presence in the area at the time.
No. Actually, it was a cool reason. It would really frost my cookies.
Something very specific or prescriptive?
Controversy generally surrounds the choice of Native American names for sports teams, but not in Cleveland until things changed.
You know, I should know this. My family's from Cleveland.
Oh, well, then you're really going to feel stupid. The city's baseball team is named in honor of one of their star players from the 1890s. He was Alex Sofalasis, a Penobscot Indian so respected that in 1914, 1 year after his death, Cleveland took the name Indians to commemorate Alex and what he had meant to their team.
It was honorary.
Yeah. So let's get rid of that because
it was honorary and done out of respect.
Yeah. Nobody goes that level.
It's like naming a park after a beloved community figure.
Yeah, who happens to have an ethnic name.
Yeah. Huh. Did not know that. And since my family's from Cleveland, should have known that.
Well, and at this point, you might be able to get a couple of free drinks at the bar next time you're with your folks.
I'm going to use that one.
What are some of the basic things that you see that business folks, small, and well, I guess, what's the technical definition of medium? Is it like 250 employees or 500?
You know, the federal definition of a small business is actually under 500 employees.
Yeah, which is really obviously goofy. We must be micro then.
In a community like ours, in a rural community like Humboldt County, most of our businesses qualify actually as small businesses.
Yeah, if they're not government related.
Correct.
What do we got, the hospital?
The
in the old days, it would have been one of the mills, but I don't think there's a mill that's running that
right,
many people.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some of the major employers in the area related to ag, for like Sun Valley Floral.
Are they over 500?
During peak season, I think they peak at 700, 800.
But that's seasonal.
That's seasonal.
Okay.
Wing Inflatables, I think they've got close to 400 or 500 employees.
So they may be touching it a little
bit. Yeah, might be touching it. But most businesses actually qualify, according to at least federal guidelines, as a small business. And there are services out there, federally funded services, that are available to small businesses.
Is that like SBDC?
SBDC, but there are other grants through the EDA, the Economic Development Administration, USDA, other federal agencies who they attach their granting or loan guidelines to that definition of what a small business is.
Is there anything for small business radio stations?
We should talk
about it. Well, there's a couple of exceptional categories, and that just happens to be one that didn't. Oh, gee, thanks. Yeah, based on format.
But, you know, one thing that's interesting to small business about small businesses, sort of one of the industry gold standard organizations that exists out there for economic development is the International Economic Development Council. And they have done a number of studies and analyses to demonstrate that the majority of job growth from the business community comes from small businesses, not your large businesses.
Right, but if your definition is 500 or less, I would think if you just looked at the number of business licenses that were out there,
right,
your preponderance is going to be under 500.
Right. I think we've got, last check that our agency did, somewhere between 7,000 and 8,000 business licenses for Humboldt County.
And we could remember 3 or 4.
Perhaps.
That might be over that
perhaps
threshold.
That
yeah.
Might be over that threshold.
So that ratio is a little goofy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with some of these different opportunities for funding or for I guess, resource assistance, whether it's brain power or financial.
Right.
Do most businesses have an awareness of these options that are out there?
I think they don't. One thing about a challenge that business owners have, and having been a business owner myself and been an entrepreneur before I came into this field.
Before you got sucked into the vortex?
Before I was sucked into the vortex. I've experienced this directly myself, is that business owners, especially entrepreneurs, they're innovators. They're creative people who have a great idea for a service or a product or a good that they can deliver to the community. And so they may be really good at making widgets or brewing a cup of coffee or running a restaurant, but they're not experts at what these services, these federally funded and state funded services and grant and loan opportunities might be for businesses. They're focused on their business.
You're doing the do in front of the counter,
mm-hmm.
or you're trying to play catch up
right.
behind the counter, doing right. the business side of things. Who has time?
That is one of the challenges we have as economic developers. Most economic development professionals are public sector. We're attached
sure.
to some sort of government funded entity, and government works 9 to 5. Although we generally put
you could you can see that about 5:04 at the courthouse steps.
Right,
it's like. Right. Okay, either there's a fire drill going on,
a mass exodus,
a feeding frenzy, right. or there's a barbecue that I'm unaware of. I mean, it just right. it's almost comical and
right.
predictable, but it's logical too. I mean, if that's
it's banking hours, and those are the same hours when businesses are tied up in the operations of what it is that. In most cases, is also their livelihood. It's not just a business that they're running. It's the paycheck that they take home.
So
to try to pull them away from that during the middle of the day to teach them about a program that may or may not benefit them,
we're doing the do.
You're right. Instead. Not their priority.
So with that, and I would like to think that that's not a big eye-opener for a lot of folks, why not stagger the hours? When there are public hearings...
Right.
Planning commissions, et cetera, et cetera. It's all done after hours.
Right.
Okay. So there's recognition that the community needs access when they're available.
Right.
Okay. Right. Or maybe be closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and be open Saturdays and Sundays.
Right.
Those simple, really simple and easy to grasp concepts don't seem to register. Is it labor negotiations that cause it or tradition?
I think it's tradition and inflexibility and how slow organizations change.
Yeah, we'll talk about slow when we come back. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Scott Adair from County Economic Development. When you consider some of that tradition, the inertia, whatever you want to call it, for government, not necessarily the pace. I mean, you understand that there needs to be checks and balances, particularly mm-hmm. when you're dealing with, quote-unquote, checks and balances with tax monies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
okay. Some of us have different standards that mm-hmm, might be mm-hmm. might be utilized for that, but otherwise. So the pace is there. It's the grasping of the obvious
right.
that seems to be missing often.
Right.
And I would be curious for the folks that you work with, either at the state level or even within the department, what percentage have actually had to write a payroll check?
Right.
Versus, well, we got all this training in school, mm-hmm. and then I got hired mm-hmm. at this in this department. Now mm-hmm. I bumped a couple of counties mm-hmm. up, and now mm-hmm. I've gotten the normal progress.
Sure.
It would be really interesting to see how many or had to sweat a payroll.
Right. You do have a lot of just long-standing bureaucrats in positions of and throughout government that are running these economic development programs that are intended to support and aid businesses. And you're right, some of them, they may have spent 20 years on the social services side of government, and they got transferred into a role where now they're supporting the business community. And it's very different. The services that we need to provide as economic developers for the private sector, we need to act and operate like the private sector and less like the public entities.
The nimbleness, the
creativity, being able to be quick.
Well, do you find a lot of creativity, Scott, in government? They kind of seem to be on two separate islands on the opposite ends of the ocean.
Working for government. You know, I came from a developer background. I came from private sector background. And spent the majority of my career after owning my own business, moving into the commercial real estate world and working with developers in a series of real estate investment trusts who were developing commercial real estate projects around the country.
Where speed is a factor.
Right. And you know, we used to say time kills deals.
Now, that's been embraced by government. We drag it out, it'll go away.
It will kill the deal yeah. if we drag it out. Government can be so process heavy and so procedurally focused that it can begin, and I've seen this time again, in our own organization and other organizations, and we're trying to improve, that you lose the spirit or the intent of what it is that you're actually established or set up to do. And that is to help that business owner or help that worker be successful, to improve their livelihood, to actually create some prosperity.
In a timely fashion
and not have it such a bureaucratic and complicated process where it's a mountain of paperwork and forms and policy and red tape.
So are there ways that some jurisdictions have to provide that backup information? So if somebody wants to find out what's going on, they can get it. But without the laborious nature, it's like if 2 pounds of paperwork is good, then 25's got to be better. Instead of going, well, maybe the other way, if we can condense this thing down to a white page summary of two,
right.
We're ahead. And if you want the excruciating detail, we got it. But that doesn't come with the first salvo.
A lot of that, and I think most residents, citizens, and just on average don't realize this because they think that their government is immune from risk or litigation. But so much of what the government does is actually because they are risk adverse.
Yeah, conflict avoidance.
Conflict avoidance.
Yeah.
So much conflict avoidance. And we will go... For every one step where we're providing a service to someone, there are three steps where we're actually protecting the governmental organization,
the home front, yeah.
against liability.
Yeah, does that also come true? Okay, I knock on your door and say, Scott, okay, I need some help. I understand from listening to this wonderful program that there's some assistance that might be available. And I ask that simple question, which ones would you go after?
Right.
Okay, at that point, now you're providing guidance, consultation, advice, all that good stuff. But there's probably an associated risk
sure.
associated with that, because here is somebody making a recommendation of either what to do or what not to do. And if it doesn't work out, it's not like it doesn't work out. It's like it doesn't work out because I spent my time, effort, and resources based on your recommendation.
I'll present some options and I would give you my ideas and some guidance, but there's probably going to be a disclaimer attached to it that I'm not an attorney. And that is something that, unfortunate or not, we do have to infuse into our work, because we do potentially when we work with businesses, could have an impact on the outcome of whatever decision it is that they're making.
You tell me to go left, I go left, and it doesn't work out.
Right.
But you know, I would think that there would be like a waiver or something and say, I'm not going to hold you accountable. Or you say it's only going to take 10 hours and it takes 20. Okay, that's frustrating. That's fatiguing. Yeah. There's a dollar sign associated with those extra hours. Yeah. But for most micro business, and let's just say under 50, great, I'm doing it at home on the weekends anyway. I'm doing it after hours because I still have got my base core project that I have to deal with or activities. This is in addition to it. Okay, so I'm out my time. I've had lots of ideas that have gone sideways.
Right.
So here's another one. Who cares?
And that's where with economic development from a service side or from a service perspective, we need to be okay with failure because it's about let's try something until we see what sticks.
Yeah, embrace it, and then if something hits.
Right.
Now,
and if that doesn't work, we're going to try something else. And that's how businesses operate.
Yeah.
And so that's why we need to operate in the same way that businesses
But the conflict
operate.
Avoidance
makes it difficult.
Litigation yeah. makes it tough. Yeah. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Scott Adair from the County of Humboldt. Scott, as you look at private businesses and some of the pressures that we have, profit, nonprofit, that part doesn't matter at all, and size really doesn't matter too much. It's attitude.
Right.
So when you're talking with folks or you're projecting how to grow certain areas, the fish folks out on the spit, okay. I mean, you got to know what their attitude is and, right. and what the others are around it and the permits that are so, and all that kind of stuff. Does it become such a morass that really can't navigate through it all?
It's funny how this works both on the business side and the consumer side, where, look, at the end of the day, we're human beings. Most of us are.
Yeah,
we're animals.
Now we're there.
We're biological creatures, and so the psychological habits and behaviors that impact us, the positive ones, lead to positive business results. If you do have, and I know this sounds like cheese. But it's true. If you have a good attitude, if you remain positive, if you have a good outlook, you're more likely, one, as a consumer, to spend money. They've proven that happy consumers, excited consumers, consumers who feel good, you know, they track it.
They track that
consumer confidence. They're more likely to spend money in their community and spend money at local businesses. Similarly, if you've got a business who is always leaning into what can I do better, how can I improve, those businesses who have those mentalities do better. It's been recorded and tracked that they have better success.
Well, I think there's can't use the word magnetism, but you go into a business A and you get a sense.
Sure.
You go into business B, you get a sense.
There's an energy. That's
there's great. A something. Yeah. When my brother had the Hallmark store, Kurt would talk about, look at the shelves.
Right.
Okay. Duh. Okay, I see a shelf. He says, don't look at the facing. How deep is it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If it's full, you got somebody that's going to be around and is making things happen. if there's a bunch of onesies, that's an indicator also. Staff attitude, the details, you know, weeds in the gutter. I mean, some of those small little elements that I don't really consider them building blocks, but they're indicators.
We as an agency have studied this, and it's also been well studied in the industry, and it's been proven time and time again. And you'll look at your more successful businesses and you'll see that they follow this track. But businesses that are clean, they're organized, they're well lit, maybe there's some nice music playing inside, maybe your radio station.
No, that's illegal unless they're paying rights fees. But
creating an ambiance.
Yeah, a sense of comfortableness.
Right, that's right.
This is a place you want to be.
Right, and then it attracts people. They want to be there. They want to stay there. Business is much more than just transactional. It's much more than just, here's my money, give me my thing, and I'm out.
Well, if it was transactional, either everybody would be price an item.
Right.
And Walmart would be even more influential than what they are.
Right.
Or it'd be all internet-based.
That's right. And how many people do you know who run to Walmart to pick up something actually enjoyed that experience? They might purchase something there because it's where they can get it the cheapest. But everyone I know has a very strong opinion about how they feel about shopping at Walmart.
Well, shopping, period. There are some of us older than yous. I enjoy the tactile experience.
Right.
I enjoy interacting with people. You know, just BSing, running up and down the grocery aisles.
Right.
I think I've shared probably way too many times. Now I probably have a reputation. You go in the grocery store and how, you know, there's a full aisle of chips. And you see people standing there looking at whether they're looking for one particular brand or version or whatever you call a variety, I guess.
Which chip do I get?
Or whoosh, and just being overwhelmed. Too many choices. Okay. So, you know, if I was in retail, I would start to, actually, I would do things like talk to customers, concept. What are you looking for? Which ones would you never buy?
Okay,
then let's get rid of those and bring in other things that, you know, so that there's that variety in the choice and you're interacting with people and it's now your store.
People like to do business with people whom they like. And it's just fundamental. We hang out with people who are like us. We spend time with people.
Oh, that explains my issues.
And who we enjoy spending time with. And the same goes for, let's say you're a service-oriented business. Maybe you don't have a store. You don't have a brick-and-mortar location. Maybe you come to people's homes. Still, that being clean and presentable and having a positive attitude, you know, when people enjoy your presence and your company, they're going to want to do business with you.
There's that intrinsicness.
Right.
I can remember, not that anybody cares, but I can remember one of the conventions when Rush Limbaugh was there after he had lost his weight. And you could see there was still the cluster of people around, and I was with Kit Carson, who was his business manager and producer of the show at the time. We're down at the hors d'oeuvre end. Yeah, and there's nobody there. So we're eating the prawns like it's going out of style, and we're flipping it back and forth. And there was that magnetism, but there was a loss of presence because his physicalness had changed.
Sure.
And I've always heard people say taller has an advantage. Good thing, otherwise I'd really be in trouble. But that there's these things that people respond to. And whether it's excitement, engagement, that aura of something.
Right.
The it.
Right, right, the it.
And some businesses.
The magnetism going back to that.
Some businesses have it, and some are trying to figure out what it is, and others have lost it.
Well, and it's especially more important today for our small businesses or our mom and pop businesses, now that they are competing with you know, those other two sides of the industry, one which is really price point driven, the Dollar Trees and the Walmarts, who you're never going to beat them on price, or the online shopping. So how do you beat that? You infuse experience.
Right. The shopping.
The overall, the overall product has an experience to it that you're not going to get online and you're not going to get at one of those you know, national discounters.
Yeah. Okay, which is really, really quick. Why can't they keep the product on the shelf in the right spot? They got the right number of people that are there. Clean the place up. I would really be curious if I had a dollar store or a Dollar General and I ran it like a high end.
Right.
Would it translate into revenue? Positive revenue.
You know, one of the reasons why they do that, it's strategic.
To keep because it looks
wandering around the store.
Yeah, looking for what's lost. Great. I do that naturally. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Scott Adair. So, Scott, what are some of the areas that either a burgeoning entrepreneur or somebody who is running a mature business tends to either overlook, take for granted, or stumble and trip and fall on? Are there normal mud puddles along the way that people will find themselves in the middle of?
One thing we see, which is very common and it happens quite frequently, is that for an entrepreneur, for a startup or a small mom and pop, you know, there's a certain level or a period in which the founder, the individual who came up with the idea, who started the idea, has to carry the ball. But they don't let go of the ball soon enough.
Yeah, the initiator, and we just kind of keep, like, do what we do.
And to really be successful, that business owner should and needs to get to a point where I've birthed this idea, I've brought it to fruition, I've brought it to reality, I've created the structure, everything that needs to be behind it for it to be successful. But now I've got to bring in some resources and some assets and some people to make it happen. And where we
kind of like hiring a manager,
a good manager,
a real manager, not somebody with a title. Manager.
Where we see businesses get stuck in that micro, small enterprise, and they're never really able to get to the next step. They'll say it's money or it's customer base, but oftentimes it's actually that the business owner won't let go.
Just attitude.
They need to focus on being less in the minutiae and the details, less in the day to day. And figure out a way to hire on people to do the day-to-day, and then their job now is to grow the business and ensure that the business is successful.
It would be, I've been jealous of some of my radio buds. Yeah, we had the stations in Brookings for a while, but it was still family. Okay. Some of my buds that are in four or five different marketplaces or communities, they're forced to have to do this. But the cash flow is there, and the attractiveness is there so that they can go out and find somebody. You know, some of these smaller businesses, like right. I think most of us are, you know, for me to bring somebody in from the Midwest.
Right.
Right. You know, just even bringing them out to interview and to see the community is a stressor, financial and time-wise, for a lot of businesses that don't have that. So I think... Yeah, I mean, you hear employment is a big deal all along. Well, employment and training, obviously.
Right.
But the compensation to feel that we can get somebody is out there, unless you're hiring headhunters, and that's a whole other additional cost, too. So you kind of are in this trap a little bit of, yeah, I'd like to. Maybe I have the attitude to, but I don't have those resources to, and I don't think there's too many banks that will loan on hiring investment cost, because it's ethereal. It's not a tangible. You kind of get in that trap. So it's not an easy it's not an easy choice to be able to do, even if you have made the choice you want to do it.
If you're the business owner, you have to decide at my price point, at the value that I can bring to my business, is the highest and best use of my time operating the
you're in my head cashier. I was making that note about best use of time.
Exactly. Do I pay someone $15 an hour or even $20 an hour or even $25 an hour to sweep the floor and stock the shelves? Or am I doing that when my cost really to the business is probably 4, 5, 6 times that?
Yeah, and then on the flip side, though, of that argument, I know you know a couple of guys, too. Not only do they enjoy it, and that's where they came from, and that's their German is showing, lining everything up properly, but it's a chance to interact on a casual basis with customers.
Oh, sure.
And overhear what's going on and seeing the systems, sure. And are they being adhered to or are they not?
Right.
It's kind of almost like quality control.
Right.
Doing that, and if they're not seen on the floor,
right,
and their customers coming in are not able to talk to the owner,
right,
they're less inclined to go there and be maybe more susceptible to other offers to transact in those businesses.
There's a give and take, and it's about being strategic with it. For example, when my wife and I owned our coffee shop, there were times where I loved to mix the coffee and steam the milk and serve the customer because I needed to stay in touch with my consumer and with what was relevant to my business. But I also knew when, if an opportunity came up for me to perhaps grow my business or expand it, and there was an important meeting that came up, I'm taking that meeting and I'm paying my staff to pour the coffee. And that's where sometimes business owners can get lost, is feeling as if only they can do everything and they have to do it all. And certainly there's some there's some gratification that comes in that, but business owners who can learn to
as you age, that starts to wane quick. Yeah.
Exactly. They can find that there's a path to success there.
Particularly if you got a 24/7.
Right. Exactly.
Sorry. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Hey, thank you. Always glad to be here.
See everybody tomorrow.